Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reddy Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
This is the ball of Tiger Woods.
Vern, this is extremely difficult. This is one of the toughest pitches on the entire place here.
Well, here it comes. Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. In your life, have you seen anything like that?
Sunshine 106.8. A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Don't forget we're here every Saturday from 9 to 11 with all your sporting news. And coming up on today's show, Stephen O'Brien of the UK Packers podcast will be with us to discuss the situation stateside and the general protests that are going on in the NBA and other sports in response to the incidents that have happened over there. In rugby, there is plenty to discuss following last week's games as well. Myself and Peter will review that and indeed discuss the week's Irish clashes this week too. Declan Drake will talk about football quarterfinals this weekend and everything that's happening in Dundalk. Alan Cawley will try to put some sense to all of the latest developments there. And as always, we want to hear from you. You can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook as well, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport106, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Now it's time to have a look at the papers. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Peter Breen. Good morning, Peter. How are you?
Good, thanks. How are you, Reggie?
I'm very well, thanks. Did you have a good week?
Good week. It's sport seems to be slowly gathering a bit of momentum, so there's a lot more interest, isn't there, in terms of lots of our different sports. Obviously, Charity Shield traditionally kicked off the season, even though the season doesn't kick off for another 2 weeks, but that was always a good indicator for people who are into football about that. GAA, there's been a thriving series of results in the Dublin Football Championship, and I know Declan will cover that later as well. And as you mentioned, the rugby, it was brilliant and an incredible achievement for not just for the Aviva Stadium and for Irish rugby, but for rugby in general to get back up and running last weekend, and two good competitive wholehearted games, and I'm sure something for all four provinces to build on.
There's no doubt about it. It's been an eventful week on and off the pitch and all around the place. We're seeing movements again in this strange COVID world that we're living in, and some places I saw Scotland getting back to allowing some of their spectators get in, albeit in a very strange picture. I saw Jim Hamilton tweeting a picture of the spectators separated out. I think they got 1,000 people in the end to Murrayfield to have a look at those the rugby at the weekend. So yeah, it's coming back in dribs and drabs in different forms of sport, although it is a bit frustrating here for people a little bit too. I have to give a mention, I had a great game of golf myself on Thursday. I was down in Bunclody. I guess the Jim Kinsel is down there for the Wexford Hurlers GA outing, and oh, what a day we had. It was absolutely fantastic. I'd never played it before. Beautiful golf course down there in Bunclody, and we were blessed with the weather. It lashed all the way down in the car, and when I got there, the sun came out and it stayed out until we finished. So big mention to the Wexford Hurlers, and thank you to them for a great day out. So what's been happening? What's in the papers?
There's lots of really good content this week. Vincent Hogan has a very good interview with Declan McBennett, who's the RTE head of sport, and just about the general landscape and how RTE are managing in the time of COVID, and some interesting insights there. He covers Joe Brawley and the decision to
what's he say about that?
Well, I think just the feeling was they made the decision and they stuck with it, you know, and it'll be interesting to see if Joe Brawley has a retort in tomorrow's Sunday Independent about it. But
did he give any insight into why the decision was made, or was it as a result of backlash from people? Or
you kind of got the feeling? Look, I think the point he's broadly making is that when you got pundits there, everyone knows, and you know as well, when you come out of retirement, you know, you're going straight into a studio or behind a microphone, you have to give opinions. You know, you can't sit on a fence. So you either make a decision that, okay, I'm going to do this and I'm going to be as honest and as forthright as I possibly can and kind of to hell with whatever relationships I affect, or else, you know what, I'm going to give a couple of years, I'm going to let my friends and peers to retire, and then really I can be more objective because I don't want to put myself in a situation. So I think on the human side, there's arguments for both. I think probably the feeling was that enough was enough, probably, with on the Joe Brawley front. I'm not going to, you know, I let Declan McBennett one day defend himself, and you know, in terms of his own situation. Mm-hmm. Joe Brawley is a very divisive personality. He's very engaging. He's very entertaining. And I think for even for non-passionate GAA enthusiasts, you'd flick on the Sunday game, or you'd flick on the football on a Sunday afternoon during a typical summer and look forward to hearing his opinions, because you know he's not going to sit in the fence. You know he's going to rattle a few cages.
Yeah, but
and he gets you talking. He gets you engaged.
Well, like, you know, I hear what you're saying, and I understand entirely from being in that situation where it is awkward to try and make comments, especially if you do know the players. I think Joe Brawley was well enough removed from that. He didn't have to worry about that so much. But just if you flip it on its head entirely, the broadcast outlet don't care about your allegiances, your ties, or your affiliations to players or clubs. All they want is good content. And you know, I completely know that Joe Brawley was a divisive figure. People love him or hate him, but there's no doubt about it, he created a lot of content and a lot of talking points, and on the back of that, a lot of publicity for RTE. And you would have thought that that might have been something that, you know, they would have wanted.
Yeah, personally, I feel probably the GAA landscape and the sporting landscape is weaker without listening to him. As I said, you don't always agree with him. You don't always agree with his methods, but he certainly is a very bright guy who is not afraid to have an opinion. And in this day and age, that's a rarity.
And in fairness, RTE sort of built themselves on that type of thing as well. If you look at, let's say, Eamon Dunphy was always very outspoken when he was on. And some people agreed or disagreed with his opinions. George Hook would be another one when the rugby in the early days would be on, and he'd be given very bizarre opinions on certain things. But people tuned in to listen to those, and they got good viewerships as a result of it. So
yeah, but my own view on that, and I'm not picking on individuals, but there's something very frustrating, and having worked in a sporting organisation, and it's all well and good saying, oh well, you just don't agree with him because he said something negative about your team. It's not about that. It's the fact that you have the ability to influence so many people when you're on a national free-to-air service, that there is a duty of care, that you actually have to do some research.
Yeah,
it's the least you owe your public. It's the least you owe yourself. So it's not really about making sure that you toe the line or whatever like that. It's just the lack of research that often goes on. And that's the frustration. Yeah. And that's, you know, particularly when there's a line that's peddled that's just factually wrong. But I have to say, Reggie, you can't, it'd be remiss not to mention the day, and I'm not saying you were wrong, but the day you gave the man of the match, remember the Claremont Munster game?
which was the abuse
that you got on the back of that.
Yeah, but I probably deserved it. But that was a complete misunderstanding. But of course, I got abused left, right, and centre over.
What happened then?
Well, no, it was just, what happened was, I wasn't supposed to call him man of the match, and I was kind of put on the spot in a last second thing by the producer over the cans, and the Claremont fullback had just made two or three very good catches in succession, so I just his name just popped into my head and I gave it. But I tell you one thing, it was a long walk from Thomond to my car after that.
I would have thought, but it's again, you're there to give an opinion, right or wrong. Not everyone agrees with you, but you're entitled to your opinion.
Yeah,
as well,
I wouldn't stand over that one. That was an error on my part. I'd be happy to
know,
have it.
Like,
a lot of people were saying, good man Reggie, don't give them anything.
but you look at that last week, I'm watching the Leinster Munster match.
Yeah.
And Liam Tolan, who I have a huge amount of time and respect for, I don't know how he could give that man the match reward to Chris Farrell.
Chris Farrell was
the fourth best centre on show in Ireland last weekend.
Yeah.
He was behind Aki, he was behind Ringrose and Henshaw. Anyway, so I don't know how. It was just a bizarre. And I just, this giving man of the match to people on losing teams as well, unless you really score four tries and really pull up trees, it was just a bizarre selection when there was a lot of really positive displays. But again, that's my opinion. Liam Tolan is far more experienced than I do, but again, that's the nature of sport, isn't it?
I'm sure he'll explain it to you in detail when you see him next. Funny that you mentioned there that Joe Brawley, I just looking as well, of course, the Soccer Saturday lads all getting let go, and I suppose it really is the end of an era for so many. But then again, you're kind of saying to yourself, well, you know, Father Time doesn't wait for anybody. It does move on, and there's a whole new generation of people probably watching Soccer Saturday who maybe not even don't remember them, you know. So
Yeah,
maybe it was inevitable these changes were going to come.
Yeah, look, I think when it comes to the broader sporting landscape now, all bets are off. And I think that all sports organisations, with the fact that budgets are squeezed, that they have to look and account for absolutely every cent, that pound, euro that's being spent, they probably have to look at everything. And that's from production to who they have in their studio and whatever else. In fairness to Sky, they've led the way for many years on football. Back in the halcyon days when they had Rodney Marsh, George Best, that was brilliant stuff on a Saturday afternoon with Jeff Stelling, and I suppose that kicked on, and it's also testament to the fact that a lot of sports people who are just coming out of their playing careers have proven themselves to be amazing pundits, you know, the Gary Nevilles, Jamie Carragher's as well, who are really industry leaders.
But is that the point, I wonder, Peter? Is that the, like, where we're going with this, that there's a, you know, there's a finite length of time that you can actually do punditry for as a former player, that, you know, you're kind of, you have to be relevant, and the ones that are closest to it would be more relevant. I mean, if you look at, let's say even in my own situation, I'm out of the game since 2007 as a player. So you're talking 13 years. I don't know the inside of the dressing room anymore. I don't know what goes on in there anymore. I don't even know the training routines. It's a totally different game to what it was 13 years
ago. Even the language is different, isn't
it? Yeah, everything. Know, the terminology, yeah. The rules have changed so much. Maybe you're not still relevant, and maybe it is time to like refresh it every 10 years.
Well, from my mind, two of the most outstanding pundits who are out there at the moment from a rugby context are Ronan O'Gara and Shane Horgan / Brian O'Driscoll, you know. But I think Ronan O'Gara is outstanding, but he's coaching still. He's on top of every single player who's performing. He's on top of every single move, play, what's going on. And that certainly stands to him and the quality of his punditry, plus he's ready to give an opinion. Again, Roy Keane is completely engaging, whether you agree with him or not, because he's just been there and done it. And okay, he hasn't become the top manager that we all thought he might have become, but he's still involved in that dressing room setup. He understands the modern game, and obviously his playing record speaks for itself.
But you hit the nail on the head there. There has to be an element of respect for the person giving the opinions. And, you know, with Roy Keane, you couldn't ever argue that he didn't give it all, but he also had the skills to back it up, and he had the titles to back it up and the success to back it up. So there's no argument in any of those things, and Neville would be the same. And, you know, any of those types of pundits that you've mentioned that are kind of right up there, you'd have that opinion of. But I suppose people would look at the Soccer Saturday crew and kind of go, well, when was the last time they were, like me, saying in a dressing room, or what have they achieved, or are they just middle, or a little bit more than middle-aged men ranting and raving?
Yeah, you know? And look, I also think there is the elephant in the room when it comes to broadcasting, and but it is important, is the promotion of gender, racial equality as well. And I think that there is a duty for, you know, certainly would it be hugely overlooked over many years, and that is really important. That's the landscape we're in now. We need to be seen as evolving sport, developing it, promoting it to new audiences, engaging with as many people as possible. And the very best sports can do that, and they can do it seamlessly. I suppose the other challenge is kind of cramming it down the throat, and does that maybe affect the actual quality in terms of what you're actually promoting? But I think, you know, it'll be interesting. Sky, I don't think, have announced who their new panel will be, but there's a hugely talented crop of commentators and analysts coming through. So it'll be very interesting to see who they do select, because they do have big budgets. You know, these are the same crowd who can bring in Roy Keane, bring in Jose Mourinho when he was out of a job. So Thierry Henry, I believe, was on massive money, over $3.5 million. Before he became the Belgian assistant coach, and before he moved back into managerial. And that is, you know, so they do have massive money to spend on it, because, again, they're influencers, and they are, the whole idea with these people is that they bring in a new audience. But I think someone who I actually think is probably one of the best presenters at Sky Sports was Laura Woods last year. She did a number of the League Cup games, and she's just brilliant. She's a brilliant manner way, good fun, but really bright and insightful. And I think that as a listener and as a viewer, that's what I want. It doesn't really matter what gender they are, what race, whatever. I just want to hear someone who's going to engage, who's going to actually entertain and enlighten me a little bit, because that's the duty of the media. That's the duty for all of us and anyone who's in front of a microphone. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see. They're changing times. Hopefully it'll be for the better. I wouldn't be too sentimental on Soccer Saturday, because in such a busy landscape, I think they probably lost their relevance over the last couple of years because radio and digital and TV has grown so much. So, yeah, it'll be interesting times ahead.
No doubt about it. Okay, let's have a look at some of the headlines from last night's sport. What have we got there? You probably want to start with the football.
Yeah, so Galway came back to equalise twice against Shells, but lost 5-2. In the cup, so that was a baptism of fire for John Caulfield. And that was the big FAI Cup action during the week. There was a up and down results for Irish clubs, and I'll include Coleraine on that. Coleraine had a terrific win up north as well, and that's a massive boost for their kitty. But Shamrock Rovers was the story of the week, winning 12-11 on penalties.
Unbelievable.
It sounds like nearly like a basketball game. Yeah. So great nerve, more than anything, to hold off and keep your composure with goalkeepers taking penalties and Joey O'Brien popping up with the winner. So look, this is really important money for any club now coming into it, and I think the biggest story of the week is Matt Doherty and the potential windfall for Bohemians.
Yeah.
Again, a really timely boost for a very well-run club who are probably in line, and depending on what the figures are relevant, whether it's 12 million or 15 million or 15 million plus add-ons, that they're going to get 10% of this. And for a guy who never actually made a senior appearance for Bohemians, And
they had to sit out the waiting game, and you know, 10 years they were waiting for him to get a transfer.
The 10% sell-on clause, and that's the standard now that every club should be looking for. I think Irish clubs definitely undersold their players over the years and should have been negotiating. And if you think that, you know, if Talla, it's a bad example, but with Robbie Keane, imagine the money they might have made out of him, if he played League of Ireland when he kicked off his career. But that's a bad example. But it's a great boost for Bohs. It's important because even with the context of the landscape of Irish football, everyone's aware that there's been investment made in Shamrock Rovers. It's not healthy when one team can jump that far ahead of others. Mm. Dundalk would have, got a lot of money in, but that's a complete circus at the moment, it seems. And I know, hopefully we'll hear from Alan Cawley later on about what is actually going on there. But, good on Bohs, and actually good on them having the bottle to negotiate that initially. And fair play to Matt Doherty. He's a player you never hear anything negative about. He's been outstanding for many years. Good swords man like myself. but he's for a guy who's come in under the, there's been a lot of talk about himself or Seamus Coleman with Ireland. If you could even come into that conversation to challenge a player the caliber of Seamus Coleman, he's a good player.
How old
is
Matt Doherty now?
Like, he's late 20s. So it's a big money move. It's rare for Irish players to go on big money moves. You think Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, obviously Jeff Hendrick has just moved to Newcastle as well, but that's on a free transfer. So it's great for the context of Irish football. And I think bigger picture for Irish soccer team, that's a real boost for Stephen Kenny now coming into these important playoff matches as well.
And of course, he announced the squad during the week too. Were you happy with that?
I think there's always a couple of players whose noses are out of joint. I don't think the challenge for Stephen Kenny is he doesn't have a chance to really test. He has to probably stick with the tried and tested of who are the players who've got Ireland to this position. But I would have full faith in him and his ability to know the underage landscape. And it's going to be a very good challenge for him to pick. It's going to be a very good challenge for him to pick his preferred 11. But I suppose, lads, I have to ask the two Arsenal fans here about the Charity Shield today.
I was just going to come,
Blaine. You're both licking your lips now about the chance for Mikel Arteta to win two trophies in less than a month.
Well, I tell you, I was just about to... Blaine, you've joined us in studio as well. I was just about to say that, we're well underdogs today, and I tell you, you can get 3 to 3.5, 7 to 2 even, or maybe even 4 to 1 in some places on us winning this game today. Leave the Liverpool lads full of confidence and all the rest. We might sneak in the back door and take it. What do you reckon, Blaine?
Morning, lads. So, I actually feel like it's going to be a very unusual game today, because you think of the Community Shield being one of the last ever pre-season games, and you look at it with this crisis at the moment, no one got to have a proper pre-season. No one got to go away. And, you know, Mikel Arteta and also Frank Lampard haven't gotten to see how they're going to, you know, line up for next season. So I think it's going to be a very unusual Community Shield. And we're going to see an awful lot of new players. And, you know, Jurgen Klopp is going to be trying out, you know, maybe trying for some of the young players that, you know, he wants to bring up from the youth team. And also his new signing as well. And also Mikel Arteta as well. He's going to have a few players that he's going to want to try and break into the first squad for next season too. So I think it's going to be quite unusual.
The danger is that it might turn into some sort of a trial match. I mean, with, you know, lack of crowds and the pre-season nature of it. It is a final, but it's not. It's going to be hard to instill that kind of energy, I suppose, into the players for this game.
And it's interesting that Arsenal and Liverpool are both on 15 Charity Shield titles. Man United lead the way on 21, so they've a chance to edge into the second place on that list. But yeah, it'll be very interesting. I know Liverpool have played a couple of friendlies, haven't really set the world alight just yet. I don't know anyone who's even talking about going out to watch this game. I don't know if it's really on anyone's radar at the moment. Look, it's great, it's another step forward, but it'd be interesting to see. And I think Arsenal will be dangerous today. And just with the fact that they haven't really lost that many players, the fact that they'll probably be that little bit snappier, I think that. But Liverpool know that they're not going to win any kind of a race at this stage in the season. It's all about building form and fitness and getting used to the surroundings again of playing an empty stadium. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It'd be very hard to pick form on this game, but and Liverpool haven't made that many signings either. There's a suggestion that some people are up in arms that they haven't really recruited yet, but you don't need to. They've won the Premier League. They've got a very young squad. Hopefully they can hold on to Wijnaldum, who's been linked with Barcelona. Mm. But I suppose that leads us nicely on to Leo Messi. And it was funny, Klopp kind of ruling himself out of buying Messi or bringing Messi to Liverpool, but also
wouldn't have the money, I don't think.
No, I think realistically Man City or Paris Saint-Germain are the only two who could possibly afford him. And look, it's
easy to rule yourself out of the running when you're not really in the running.
Exactly. It's like me saying, I don't think Margot Robbie wants to go out with me, you know. I don't think I was in every chance, really. But it's, you know, Messi going to Premier League would be an incredible feat to get him, to afford him. But he's pure box office. And you're talking about, it's not even a once-in-a-generational player. He's in the top five players of all time.
Oh, 100%.
And
absolutely,
to manage to get him in the twilight of his career would be some coup. And that
especially
would be,
if it seems, as it does, that he wants to go for reasons of winning something as well, because he's it feels like Barcelona has gone very stale and that he's very much disillusioned by that staleness and their lack of direction, maybe, and their lack of ambition. So it may be a case that he wants to go out on the high almost and showing what he can do, showcasing what he can do, and actually competing for trophies.
With
a PSG, like, you know, that's possible. With a City, that's possible.
Yeah, but the great, great players do it in multiple countries. And I think that you look at Zidane, he did it in Italy, he did it in Spain, he did it in France, he obviously did it at international level. You look at Maradona, you know, for me, Maradona will always be the top player because not only did he win the World Cup and captain the World Cup, but he took probably one of the least fashionable Italian clubs in Napoli and dragged them kicking and screaming to that Serie A title.
I watched the documentary on that and oh my God, it was just so... It seems like such a backwards time almost, you know, so far removed from what we're seeing nowadays. But great.
But obviously Messi's, you know, he'll be returning to work under Guardiola, but also Sergio Aguero's son is Messi's godson.
Right.
And Sergio Aguero's son is Diego Maradona's grandson. So there's a serious football stock there as well. Yeah. So obviously there's a very tight relationship as it is there.
If it was horses we were breeding, there'd be people queuing up outside. Yeah. The bloodline is good.
I'm probably mixing up my genders, but you're talking like Galileo and Churchill or whatever, but, you know, and a crossbreed between hybrid between those two. So yeah, no, but that I suppose is really exciting for everyone in the league. I think it puts immediate manners on the likes of Liverpool as well, coming into the, you know, that they know they're going to be up for a massive battle again. And Spurs are reinvesting. Man United are going to reinvest, I'm sure. And Chelsea have spent huge money. So it's actually building up. There's a lot of excitement around the league this year.
Excellent stuff. Okay, well, we'll talk to Alan Cawley a little bit later on in the show as well about things football. In golf, Rory McIlroy is amongst the leaders of the halfway stage of the BMW Championship. Fairly high scoring tournament, and he'll begin the day 3 on 1 under following yesterday's 68. So he's going well, and did see that he hit a 368-yard drive the other day. Mother of God, unbelievable. But anyway,
I'd like to mention an incredible achievement, actually, in the golf. This weekend, Brendan Lawler, he is an Irish golfer who made history at the Belfryer this weekend, becoming the first professional disabled golfer to compete at the European Tour. So he's the 4th world ranking in golfers with disabilities. So I just thought I'd mention that because it's an incredible achievement.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And long may it last. A little bit of rugby going on, of course. Last week was interesting, Peter. We'll cover it a bit more in the rugby just after 10. But hard to know what we were getting last week before the match. In the end, I think both teams gave a good account of themselves in the Leinster-Munster game and got stuck in. Certainly, Connacht gave a very sound performance against Ulster. Ulster again falling to that question mark that I always have about them, about where their heads are at. But in the Leinster-Munster game, Leinster got there. Maybe the scoreline flattered Munster a little bit.
Yeah, it did. Look, there's no doubt the injuries affected Munster, and I know we'll cover it properly after 10 o'clock. I think with Connacht as well, it's easy for them. They've got 2 matches to build off, then they've got 5 weeks off. So they can go full metal jacket for these 2 weeks. Mm. And that's, you know, I think as you said at the start of the show, that's what makes them very dangerous against Munster tomorrow. And, you know, the fact that Leinster are likely to play Munster next week, but that hasn't been determined, and there's speculation that that match will be on next Friday night. Edinburgh are playing Ulster, and Ulster just lack that mental toughness, or seem to. And the fact that Edinburgh beat Glasgow last week, it meant that Ulster had already qualified, so they probably took their eye off the ball. And to be fair, Dan McFarlane blasted them after the game about that. Mm. So that's, it comes down to a mental toughness, which makes them a very dangerous animal tonight, because they would have got a kick up the backside, and deservedly so last week. They have a very talented team out. You mentioned the likes of Ian Madigan, who'd be looking for to prove a point, and many others like Jordy Murphy and whatnot. And Stockdale continues at full back. So there's a lot to talk about there. I think the bigger talking point about going to be the context of the Pro 14 and how that's going to look over the next year. And certainly there's been some speculation with the South African clubs what's going to happen. So from what I gather and what's been in speculation in the papers over the last day, Southern Kings are about to go bust, and they're going to probably be pulled from the competition, and the Cheetahs are going to probably follow suit. So next year you'll probably have a Pro 12, and then the following year you'll have a Pro 16. So the Bulls, the Stormers, the Sharks and the Lions will come into the Pro. So that's how the landscape, and that it's going to move, you'd imagine, quite quickly. So with the restrictions around South Africa, the fact that teams are unlikely to be able to travel there anyway.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden we're going back to 12 to move forward to 16. Now,
a lot can happen between here and there.
Yeah. But it seems to make sense, and that will increase competition levels, but you know,
it'll all depend on the freedom of travel and how everything unfolds in the world that we're in. But it's certainly an interesting thought process. I'm going to have to leave it there. Just to mention as well that the cycling, 2 months later than planned, of course, the 2020 Tour de France gets underway today. So there'll be 3 Irish riders competing in the 107th edition of the Tour. Sam Bennett makes his debut in the race. Dan Martin heads Israel Startup Nation's first ever tour, while Nicholas Roach is part of the Sunweb contingent. And the Grand Départ is the 170-kilometre stage around Nice, which will be very interesting. I always have mixed emotions around cycling. I loved watching it when I was younger, and then the gloss went off it on me in later years for obvious reasons. But it's still an incredible endurance race, and some of the scenery that you're seeing when you're watching the tour go around France is quite incredible. And I'll never forget when they had the race come through Bray back in the day, and it was really, really amazing to watch it all in real life. But anyway, I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Stephen O'Brien of ukpackers.co.uk. There's a lot of very interesting things unfolding stateside in the aftermath of the shooting of Jacob Blake. Postponed sports across the board. We see the NBA have taken a stance to make sure that they, you know, they've postponed three games, and it's all in response to that. And we also see the there was some Major League Baseball games postponed as well, and the Women's NBA also postponed matches. So there's a lot happening over there in protests going on right across the board. So Stephen, we have you on this morning to try and fill us in and give us a little bit of background. How are you?
Not too bad, Reggie. How are you getting on?
I'm doing well, thanks. Doing well. Good to chat to you. It's been a while, but we're talking about sport in general. I know it's normally the football that keeps us entertained with yourself, but this time we want to kind of cover everything that's happening over there. And I suppose for our listeners, just to kind of give them a little bit of background, at what stage, where was the NBA season, and, you know, why it's sort of come into the news so much more than in the last few months for more than just the sport itself?
Yeah, it's an odd one. So the NBA, they had the regular season, and they haven't got to the playoffs yet. And March sort of swung around. We all know we're all stuck inside houses now listening to sports shows like this. And yeah, so one of the players ended up getting COVID, so they had to cancel it and shut it down like everything else. But again, there's massive amounts of money. Like, America is just ridiculous for sports with the money that goes into it. I know sports is a big money game everywhere. And we see the likes of the NFL games when they come to London, and there's, you know, 500,000 people that go through Regent Street. So the NBA, like the NFL, and like all other sports over there, they've massive money in their TV deal. So it was within their best interest to try get the sport back up and running again. And why it's been in the news and why people are talking about it, not only this week because of the protests that have been going on, but they sort of invented this bubble. So what they said was, like, look, we want the season to get back rolling again. We've got an awful lot of money on the line here. There's an awful lot of athletes, although they're paid a ton of money. We all know LeBron James and Kawhi and all of these players that people will sort of know have on the back of their jerseys. But there's an awful lot of young players who want to get paid too. So it was in an awful lot of people's best interest, more so the rich owners, to get the games back going again. So they decided to bring everyone down, all the players, in this bubble down into Orlando, Florida. And there's three venues there in this sort of ESPN Sports Center down there. And they decided to bring everybody down, sort of test them for COVID before. And it's been really, really effective to get everybody down there and to get them playing again. So they kind of hit the news before all of this started to kick off, because, you know, everyone was in an experimental stage. The NFL season was over, so, you know, they didn't have any complications. But when you came to baseball or WNBA or NBA, the issue that they had, they were smack bang, not kind of in the middle of their season, but they still had games to play. So that's why they hit the news right before this, was because of that bubble.
It's an interesting concept, that bubble. I mean, I get it. It's very logical. And certainly from a televised sport point of view, it's an ideal setup. You know, you keep everybody in a bubble. You don't let them outside into the world. You make sure that you're producing content every week and that the games are going ahead. But from it really does bring home the idea that the players are literally just commodities, and you are, you know, you're a performing, you know, you're paid to perform. You're a performer.
Yeah, and the players have said that, and that's why an awful lot of the top names, you see the thing, it's like a disparity here too. You have the top paid players, and then you have the players not earning so much. So, you know, there was a different voice. They're not all sort of one group of, like, we do or don't want to play. There was kind of a mixed bag there. And some of the players had said that, because what had happened was, is the George Floyd incident had happened, and there was the social unrest, and 80% of the players in the NBA are black. So, you know, they wanted to, and again, the NBA is a very progressive league in the sense that the players are encouraged to speak up, and the owners tend to be more, dare I say, liberal. So they're happy for the players to use their platform, and we see LeBron James doing that more often than not. So, and the difference between that and the NFL, I guess, is NFL players, as silly as it sounds, wear helmets. They're not as visible almost, and then some, you know, there's so many players on each team, and so they're not as visible, whereas the NBA have always been good for speaking up. And also the players, Reggie, didn't want to go into the bubble for the simple fact was, is that they wanted to join in the social protests to try get stuff moving sort of around the area of racism and police brutality. And they felt that if they went into the bubble, not only they're being shoved away in kind of this corner where they can't really get in contact properly with the outside world as they would want to by joining protests on the streets and everything else, which some of them did, is that now they're going to play sport again, and people are going to stop talking about protests and start watching basketball again. Mm-hmm. So they almost felt like they were sort of contributing to the fact that people weren't speaking about the issues. And as you said, this all came to a head with the shooting of Jacob Blake. Now, this isn't black and white at all. Although it's about sort of, you know, black people, white people, the racial disparity, it's anything but black and white when it comes down to the issues, because we've seen the video, and a lot of people have seen it. And for me, what it comes down to is that there was a black man in front of his kids, was shot 7 times in the back, right? Which is a bit heavy for a sports show early in the morning, and I get that, right? Mm-hmm. Now, there's all of this sort of innuendo and this talk about his criminal record and what he was reaching for in the car. But there's a video released today or yesterday on Twitter from a guy from ESPN showing a man. It's Mark Jones, ESPN, if anybody wants to see it. It's of a white guy shouting expletives at a cop, doing exactly the same as what Jacob Blake did, and it ends completely differently. It ends with him throwing his license at the cop and calling him all types of names, and the cop also with his firearm out. So that there's a disparity there. Now, it's not simple, but where it came to a head with NBA was is that it happened in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is where the Milwaukee Bucks, who are in the playoffs, is where it's about 40, 45 miles away from where they play. And the reason it's so newsworthy and why it took the sports world by shock is that the players had kind of spoke about it in the bubble, whether it was right to be playing basketball in the first place, whether they should have even went to Orlando in the first place. And the big name players with the biggest platform had spoke about maybe doing protests. But it was decided that they'd sort of crack on with the season. That was fine. But when this Jacob Blake incident happened and the social unrest happened, and then you have the white 17-year-old who shot 3 protesters, killing 2, showing again the disparity because he tried to hand himself into police and they basically waved him on and said, look, you know, go away, without kind of realising exactly the sort of weight of exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So what happened was the Milwaukee Bucks then find themselves in a situation where, you know, a day or two later, they're in the locker room and they're saying, can we really go out and play basketball? Mm. Is that the right thing to be doing? So their opponents were out on the court and they were warming up, and the Milwaukee Bucks even took them by surprise and decided that they weren't going to take the basketball court and they were going to postpone the games. And that's important for a couple of reasons. And I know we only have a certain amount of time.
Sorry
if I'm waffling on. But basically is that every sport, especially American sports, have these CBAs. So there's sort of a player agreement so that they can't be abused and the owners get what value for their money-ish. And so there's a clause in there that says you can't strike because that's the worst thing that they want to see. For the NFL, it has happened before a couple of times, and the same with the NBA. But what they decided was is effectively to go on strike. And that's why you see they call it a postponement or they call it a boycott, is because they don't want to come out and say that they're after striking. But the important thing about all of this, Reggie, is that, one, it took everybody by surprise because it was a sort of seemingly a spur of the moment thing where they said we can't consciously go out you know, in this atmosphere without trying to make a stand. But more so than anything else, this is player-led.
Mm.
And as well as that, their boycott came, and we've talked about it a lot on the show over the years, the Colin Kaepernick kneeling thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's an awful lot to that as well. I know I was on the show saying, well, what's the next step? What are we looking for here? Because it's a very noble act, but, you know, what's the game plan? And the problem with that protest was, is that although many players around the league decided to kneel for the national anthem and gain attention, there was no sort of battle plan and no one came to back them up, because an awful lot of players still stood, or with the likes of my team, the Packers, they decided to link arms instead because it was seen as incredibly offensive. This time around, all of the teams are boycotting. All of the NBA games were cancelled for those 2 days. And in fact, the players held a meeting in the bubble and they asked, do we just scrap the playoffs in general? And the Clippers decided, yes, that's what we want to do. The Lakers said the same. All the other teams decided that they wanted to go ahead in some form. So they had a meeting yesterday, the day before, and they put down an action plan, which again is, these are athletes, and we have an awful lot of fan reaction that says, just stop talking about politics and just start playing sport, which is amazing to me that people want these black players, as you said, like commodities, to play basketball, to take their mind off politics, and to stop trying to be human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my take, and I don't know if that's everybody's take.
Well, that certainly says a lot about the situation. Peter, before the break, you were making the point about the players being commodities and how the teams had a meeting and they came up with a sort of a plan on it. But at the end of the day, although the Clippers and a couple of other teams kind of, you know, wanted to continue to protest, they went back to work and they went back to playing games as the decision. So I suppose the question really has to be asked, is this more of the same? I mean, we mentioned, we covered Kaepernick a lot on this show with you.
Yeah.
Is it more of the same? Is it like back to business as usual? Did it achieve anything having all these boycotts? And what pressure does it put on other sports to follow suit?
You see, that's the real question. So with Kaepernick, what ended up happening was that people just got offended. And, you know, at his stage in his career, I guess, he had got benched for another quarterback and people questioned his play, including me. And the fact that because we, you know, he used to annihilate the Packers the whole time. And then we played him sort of recently at the sort of tail end of when his career was kind of cut short because he asked to be sort of traded away from the 49ers. And I saw that his... certainly against us, his level of play had went down. So with him and with a certain amount of players taking the protest, nothing was really done. But it all comes down to this, especially with the NBA, is that all of these teams, apart from the Packers, are all owned by rich owners. And what happened with the Bucks when they protested was, and to answer a question of like what's different here, and this will show the impact that can be had when all of the players decide to do it, because this is newsworthy as well, because this only happened in the NBA twice before. One, when Rodney King was bludgeoned on the ground by cops, and we all know what happened there in LA. And then when Luther King was shot and assassinated, it happened then as well. So, I mean, it's pretty unprecedented that this happens. But they went back into the locker room, and this is the difference, Reggie, guys, is that they released their statement, and then the owners from the Bucks came in, and they sat down, and they got in contact, the owners got in contact with the governors in Wisconsin and the lawmakers, and they got them on a Zoom call with the athletes in the locker room, and they asked them to reconvene the legislature and to try to go and sort of push through, you know, legislation or something around police brutality to try bring Jacob Blake's, the cops that did that, to justice and to try get some action there. Because it was at the same time that the stuff was happening in Kenosha where the white 17-year-olds was going around, you know, shooting people. So, like, that's the difference here, especially with when people all come together. So all of the other teams came together. Now, I know I said the Clippers and the Lakers decided that they were going to continue on the protest, but they went and had a meeting with governors and owners, and the NBA and the Players Association released a statement as to what they want to do to try and move on, because there's a mixed bag out there with how people are reacting to this. Some people are like, well, the boycott didn't go on for long enough. You know, you've kind of caved too early. But really what they've done is that they've tried to create some sort of meaningful dialogue to come from all of this, because Kaepernick was kneeling for an unbelievable amount of time and the other players are coming out in solidarity. And, you know, Jay-Z ended up getting signed by the NFL to come in and try to start some sort of social justice program. And there was something being done, but it was still largely on the back burner and being ignored. But this statement is super powerful, because what it's doing is that they've decided to set up a social justice coalition between the players, coaches and governors to try achieve something with legislation. But a really massive thing for me that comes out of all of this is, and if anyone wants kind of the background as to the inequality, watch the documentary 13th on Netflix. And that will give you kind of an example of what's gone on since slavery was, and I put this in air quotes, abolished, the whole way up to what's happening now. Now, it's not black and white. I'm not saying it's a simple issue. Mm-hmm. But one of those is around voting, right? And what's been happening, if anyone's sort of following the political news over there with the mail service and the removal of mailboxes and the mail-in voting, and, you know, there's an awful lot of the black community that aren't even registered to vote. They don't know how, they're not being given the information, all this type of stuff. But what the NBA have done is that they're making agreements wherever they have these big massive stadiums, is that they're going to set these up as polling stations to allow people to go in and place their vote. And as well as that, these places are massive, there'll be social distancing. Where they miss the cutoff, where they can't have these as polling stations, they're going to set them up as voter registration stations, which is quite a phrase. So that people are going to be able to go in and register to vote. So, I mean, this is where we're seeing, Reg, a difference between the kneeling of Colin Kaepernick to how, and again, it did start with him.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy who was lambasted in the media. Donald Trump called him all sorts of names. And even Donald Trump has come out, the President of the United States has come out and said that the NBA has now become a political organization.
Yeah.
When really they're just using themselves as a platform to try bring about change. And the change is very visible on social media, videos of these people getting shot in the back seven times, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well, it certainly is something that's going to run and run. And I think, as you said, Kaepernick, that whole beginning of things, I mean, it's incredible to think that Jacob Blake could be shot in the manner that he was so soon after Floyd, and how the police officers don't seem to have even considered the fallout from all of this. But look, that's the political side of it. And in general, sport is being used in a positive way to try and make those changes and try and get that into people's minds. Stephen, as always, been absolutely brilliant talking to you. Very informative. I learned a lot from that chat. And I'm looking forward to the point where we can get back and start talking NFL again.
Indeed. Yeah, hopefully that'll be soon.
That's great. Thanks a lot, Stephen. Good luck with everything. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Tony.
Stephen O'Brien there at the UKPackers.co.uk. Yeah, and it is. It's the point, you know. I mean, it starts with the likes of the Kaepernick incident and the taking the knee and all of the controversy that surrounded that, from the president right down to the man in the street, man and woman in the street, being offended or not offended by it. But that's it. It starts talk, it starts conversation. And I think it's a similar thing with the NBA. Obviously, sport will return, but it gets people thinking and it starts those process. And if it can start conversations, I think it's heading in the right direction. It's time to turn our attention to rugby now. It finally got back here last week with some interesting clashes, and Peter and myself will now be discussing it. So it was great to see it coming back last week, Peter. I think for many it was probably a better standard than they had expected. Certainly both teams in both games seemed to give it everything. I know Dan McFarland, the Ulster coach, wasn't too happy with his charges performance against Connacht, but overall I think the standard was pretty high given the length of time that we've been away.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes it was a pre-season friendly given the time of year, but it certainly wasn't friendly. And I think, look, a lot of the sting of the battle went out when Klein, Snyman and Dave Kilcoyne were ruled out for Munster quite early in the game. So that just meant that their bench resources were going to be stretched going into the last 80 minutes. And I know the Munster reserve scrum half, Craig Casey, came under a lot of scrutiny because he kicked the ball out at the end. It was a very strange one because they were trying to protect the losing bonus point, which could be quite important given Munster's ambition to get to the semi-finals next week. But it was as a statement in that kind of a match where Munster could still have snuck that win. I suppose that was the conflict with people, but I think it was the best decision to make, actually. And I think for a young fella who was obviously working under direction, he came under a lot of pressure on it. But look, be under no illusion, Leinster were by far the better team. There were some outstanding performances. I thought Ringrose looked very, very sharp. And the problem that Munster are going to face now, when we were talking off air about Joey Carberry and his unfortunate series of injuries that are going to rule him out for another lengthy period, Keith Earls and Andrew Conway particularly are being scandalously underused. And with the manner in which they've got Farrell, they've got Dallande in the centre, you're just trying to, they need to work out a better way of getting getting the ball in the hands of Conway in particularly and Keith Earls as well, because they're going to really struggle. And if that's really the best of what Munster can offer last week, which I don't think it is, but if that's where they are at the moment, I'd be very, very nervous.
Well, they've got to work with Hanrahan. I mean, it's, to me, they've got a like he's their only option. I mean, Carberry seems to be still quite a way away from being where he needs to be at. But even at that, he just hasn't had game time. So, like, to get up to speed, and he needs continuity, he needs succession of games. So they've got to try and find a way. Like JJ Hanrahan, you know, it's a good article in the Examiner with him. He's comfortable in that position, he says, and happy to be in control. But they need to find a way to make that work, because I mean it is a very threatening, as you mentioned, backline. I mean, Earls and Conway on the wings are a serious threat. Lethal, when they get the ball. A serious, serious threat when they get the ball. And Dallande and Farrell are two very strong centres. And Murray, you know, is regardless of what people said about his form last season, he is still one of the best nines in the world, and he will get back to that level. So it's just about finding that link between Hanrahan and unleashing that backline, and that's the key to everything for them.
Well, it is, and look, there's no doubt they've suffered with injury. I think my worry with when I look at Hanrahan, you know, he was nominated for the World Junior Player of the Year all those years ago, and everyone thinks that, you know, he was in the realm of being one of the top players in the world. He wasn't. That was a public vote. And I actually think, psychologically, that was one of the worst things that could have happened to him, because all of a sudden that put massive pressure on him and his career and everything he's done since then. He got a big money move to the UK. He's come back. I just don't know. He's a talented player, absolutely, but is he that O'Gara type person. Like, Ian Keatley was castigated for years. Ian Keatley's one of the most prolific point scorers in the history of Pro 14, which everyone seems to ignore with him. Yeah. And Hanrahan now is the second coming of Christ. And he's not at that level. He's nowhere near that level, let's be honest about it. So that's a challenge. And you're right that the coach has to now work with what he has. He doesn't have the opportunity to dip into a transfer market and buy an outstanding player to replace Carberry. So, but it's just, I just look at Munster, they just seem confused. Like, they've now got massive pressure on them with the recruitment drive they made this summer. And they're really going to have to step up against Connacht. Connacht, as we mentioned before, have these 2 weeks of matches. Then they've got 5 weeks off, and then they're going to start their game again. So Connacht will go absolutely all guns blazing tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock. And really, is that going to be the best thing with a less of a day recovery potentially if Leinster play Munster on a Friday night already? And then you're talking about potentially more injuries or niggles coming out of that game tomorrow.
And Connacht are playing well, let's not forget it. I mean, they did a job on Ulster. I mean, Dan McFarlane can make all the excuses he wants about lads sitting on the couch, but the bottom line is Connacht, and you know, we know it, Connacht down there are like, Connacht, when they're trying to defend, you know, their honour almost, when they're playing them down there, it's hard in the Aviva or anywhere else. They want to make a point, and that's what they're doing. I expect Munster to get the result. I do, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if Connacht one, turned them over, but also just, you know, made it so difficult for them that they are battered and bruised by the time it comes around to that semi next Friday.
Well, that's exactly it. You know, they have a good chance to just throw everything at it. Munster really need to certainly get into the semi-finals. They don't want to let the season go out with a whimper. They still have a bit of work to do to make sure that they get it. So there are a few different permutations. They do need to pick up 2 points. And so it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I think the interesting case, as you mentioned, was Dan McFarland. And similar to Neil Lennon in the Celtic game, where a coach is absolutely lighting a fire under his squad, you know, he was very vocal in his criticism of the attitude of Ulster coming into the match last week. Just to explain very quickly, Edinburgh had beaten Ulster, had beaten Glasgow the night before, so that had guaranteed Ulster a place in the semi-finals, and that was probably, he felt that they took their foot off the gas as a result. I don't know, that's as much a reflection on the coach as it is the players, in my view. But I think what Ulster did last week was a number of their frontliners played the first 40 minutes last week, so they were already managing resources with obviously tonight's game with Leinster in mind, and then the big kahuna will be away to Edinburgh next week. So yeah, the big question with Ulster is they've got a lot of talent there. They've made a lot of
We spoke about it last week, Peter, you and I mean, they have a lot of talent there. They have a coaching setup that's, you know, producing things, but they're always, it seems they're always making excuses, or they're always chasing the reasons why. And as you said there, you know, sitting on the couch or whatever, it is the coach's responsibility to make sure that happens. Like, there's talent in that squad. It's a very, very good team. You know, you have to call it out. And I know Stephen Ferris is always saying this, and he's not afraid to come out and say it. They've got to perform. They've got to, you know, stump up. It's a bottom line with Ulster. They just so don't get that consistency of the hardness of performance. And you know, I would say that Connacht produce it more than they do on a more regular basis. They're never found wanting. They may not have the same talent, but they're never found wanting. And I think Ulster just undersell themselves to what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, and I think the halfback challenge tonight now with Cooney and Madigan coming up against Gibson Park and Ross Byrne, they're four players who are going to be in the Ireland mix this autumn. That's going to be interesting. I think Geordie Murphy will certainly have a point to prove. Marty Moore is on the bench, and I'm just talking about the ex-Leinster players in that rank. But they're a talented team, Ulster are. I'm sure they get it right, but they really want to get their, you know, this season. I'd be surprised if they're going to lift the Pro 14 title this year. They may well sneak into a final. but
it is a strong Ulster team. You know, looking at Stockdale moving to full back there for a bit of versatility to try and add to his game. McCluskey there in the centre as well. I'm very excited about seeing Madigan and Cooney combining together at 9 and 10. I think they can really unleash some of the very strong attacking threat that Ulster do have in that back line. And there's going to be a good battle up front as well. Leinster making 15 changes. Quite incredible, really, that they're able to do that. You know, Rob Kearney there getting his opportunity through to go out on his own terms, as it was put last week to me, in there at full back. So it's a strong Leinster side as well. And Ross Byrne, of course, coming in there at 10, who's been very, very solid the whole way through for Leinster. So it has the makings of a great game, no question about that.
Yeah, and I think the main theme for Leinster is about managing resources now over the next few weeks. So 23 out of the next 24 weeks, Leinster are going to have matches on. Yeah. So there's going to be one fallow weekend, which will be in October, in around when the Six Nations resumes. So that is a real test now for the coaches and for the players themselves and the fitness staff to make sure that they can resource the squad appropriately. So this is the last chance tonight now to manage and rest and rotate, whatever way you want to put it, that squad. But there was definite rustiness last week with Leinster. I think they'd be annoyed that they allowed Munster so close at the end, and there were defensive frailties that need to be rectified. But Leinster know that Saracens are waiting in the long grass. Saracens are going to wait. They've got their last big game for 12 months. For that Champions Cup quarter-final, and they're going to be absolutely gunning, particularly with the lack of a crowd here, will level the playing fields, and they won't have any real fear of coming over to an empty Aviva Stadium. So that's something that's going to be in the back of their mind. I think Baird was very good last week. He was certainly helped. He didn't have the same intensity of a challenge with Steinman going off so earlier, but it was an incredible experience for him. And Ryan Baird is going to be a talent, possibly, you know, could very well follow in the footsteps of James Ryan and at the second row. And this is the last chance to rotate. Dave Kearney, they got good news that he's going to be back in a few weeks. The worry was that he was going to be out longer. James Ryan and Dan Levy should be back in the next 2 or 3 weeks. So all of a sudden then you're looking at Leinster and they're really looking robust. But they'll want to see a statement from players tonight. They'll want to see somebody stick their hand up and cause a few selection issues. But also it's really important that these players, in the context of what is effectively a pre-season at this time of year, when you're trying to get enough miles under the clock for players after such a long break, that it's got to be a real good battle, I think, for the Leinster squad to try and see what Ulster are made of. And for Ian Madigan, he hasn't played a lot of rugby in the last 2 years. So even though he's super fit and he's super competitive and he's got a lot of talent, you know, I wouldn't expect miracles from him yet, but certainly he's going to have a very big say on how the next couple of months are going to pan out. And I'm sure he's already been quite vocal in that he wants to get into the Ireland squad. I think his concern should be just get in the Ulster team firstly and do well, because he's got the ability and the talent to do so. And I've no doubt if he does that, that's good news for Ireland as well.
And do you think that's a possibility? I mean, we mentioned off air there, you know, he's got a bit of competition.
Yeah, Jack Carty's done really well at Connacht. Ross Byrne has never let Leinster down.
Yeah. And even within Ulster, he has competition.
Yeah,
you know?
Billy Burns was captain last week. So that was as much as a comment about his ability to lead and where he's seen in terms of experience. So, yeah, look, but I'm sure that's why he moved. He's a versatile player. He's not just an out-and-out 10. He can play 12. He can play 15. And he's got huge experience. He was a former Leinster Player of the Year. He's won European titles at Leinster. So it was a very good signing for them. And I'm sure he's got a point to prove. He'll be hungry. And look, as I said, the bigger picture, it's good news for Ireland that he, alongside other players, are back playing in a province. And look, Dan McFarlane is going to be looking to players like him with his experience of winning trophies, like Geordie Murphy, Marty Moore, Jack McGrath. He'll want to see them try and seek out or eke out that culture into this Ulster team, and that's going to be a process. That's not going to be a flicking on a light and then all of a sudden everything is rosy again. So it'll be a very interesting battle tonight. I wouldn't read too much into the result, but obviously it's important as well. You know, I think Leinster Ulster games are always spicy down the years, and you certainly don't want to let the bragging rights go.
Mm. You mentioned Dan Levy there. There was some chat that he might be available for this game, but
no, two or three weeks. I think himself and James Ryan. Yeah,
okay, they're still together. That far away. Okay. Well, look. Even at that, it's earlier than had been expected. So that's great.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Just as a side note, as well, the Pro 14 final venue. I don't know why they haven't really thought, or maybe they are, but they should have it up in the Kingspan up the north, because to be able to get 5,000 people in, I know there's been suggestion that maybe have it in the Aviva Stadium, but if you got 5,000 people in and charge them 50 quid a head, that's a quarter of a million that you probably weren't going to expect to have. So I wonder, have the Guinness Pro 14 thought about that? And maybe they have, maybe it's a stupid idea, but given that the laws of the land are so different from the north and to the south of Ireland, you know, that could be a solution as well, to just to try and get, you know, to satisfy sponsors and obviously some fans and media, but just to get that buzz going of live entertainment again.
Yeah, I suppose it's very hard to plan around any form of crowds with the ever-changing landscape, because you just don't know when you change it, you plan it, and then it gets shut down anyway. So it's maybe they're just thinking that it's not worth all the effort. Speaking of which, COVID-wise, there was 8 players tested positive up in the academy up in Ulster.
Look, this is going to be a sign of the times, isn't it? You know, we're talking about
8 is a lot now in the academy setup, though. You know,
the only thing is, you could be talking, and I'm speculating, but you could be talking about players that live together as well. You know, you know, academies, there aren't massive numbers. You're usually talking between 10 and 15 or 10 and 20.
Yeah, that's why it's a worry that it's only that 8 of them actually have it.
But it might be easier to quarantine, is what I'm saying. You know, you're not talking about people going back to different families. But I don't know. When you're right, you know, it is nervous. You look at Paul Pogba, you look at the 4 Arsenal players who have been quarantined. You know, you look at there's issues in Chelsea. This is going to be a sign of the times now. Mm. So it just reinforces the need. And any time anyone thinks, oh, can we not have a couple of thousand here or a couple of thousand there in the Aviva or whatever else, it just had to be so, so careful now. And certainly nobody wants to put anyone in jeopardy. So, yeah, they seem to have dealt with it quite quickly. The IRFU seem to be on the front foot in terms of identifying and detecting and then quelling the spread of the COVID virus. So hopefully that'll continue, and hopefully they won't be busy worrying about it.
Okay, good stuff. Well, that's the rugby for this week. Certainly plenty coming up and plenty to look forward to tonight and tomorrow with those games. Well, it's time to turn our attention to GAA now, and as always, joined by our own Declan Drake. Morning, Declan.
Hello, Reg. How you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. Plenty going on sport-wise this week, and in GAA it's been pretty hectic, and last week was hectic as well. Of course, we had the Senior Hurling Championship quarterfinals on. I suppose we'll start with Nafina. They had a pretty convincing win over Fogs.
Yeah, it was an expected win for the Mowbray Road men, all right, to be fair, you know, but a couple of early second-half goals really setting them on their way to the last four, so we said last week in the programme, a tremendous opportunity for one of the clubs to make serious progress, and then Nafina were able to grasp that nettle and take it last week. But overall, the year for Fogg, reached the last 8 of the county championship this year, so plenty for them to build on, and Nafina now can look forward to the next day out.
Yeah, absolutely. The other one that we were really anticipating, of course, was Ballyboden against St. Vincent's. I think we felt this was going to be a much more of a contest than it was in the end. Ballyboden ran out 10-point victors. A little bit of a surprise that there was that much in it in the end.
No, I agree with you, absolutely. I wouldn't have seen a 10-point win for Bowden in the game. I thought that they would win it, but I didn't think they'd win by that much. But the outfit, they're motoring quite nicely up there on the Fairhouse Road at the moment, and from the county point of view, great to see Paul Ryan in top form, a goal and 9 points for him, and the evergreen Conal Keeney, did I see somewhere the other day, he's a couple of weeks short of his 38th birthday and still performing to a very high standard for the Bolton Hurlers. He scored 4 points in that win last week, and of course he's going to be in football this weekend as well. So
yeah, Declan, it's a bad line there. I'm going to go let you go, and I'm going to come back to you. We'll give you a call back, because that line has just dropped off quite badly there. So we're just going to try and get Declan back on. He was just talking about the win there for Coola. We were about to go on to the win for Coola against St. Bridget's. Of course, they ran out 126 victors over St. Bridget's, but we'll discuss that when we get him back on the line again. And as Declan was alluding to there with that Ballyboden win. It certainly wasn't expected that there'd be a 10-point victory between themselves and St. Vincent's, but of course the second half, they were dominant in the second half, Ballyboden. They ran out 10-point victors and took care of that second quarter final. Yeah, Peter?
Yeah, no, it's the one thing, looking at the Dublin results last week, is it, how great it is to see that Dublin All-Ireland winning squad, and all of them, or a lot of them, playing for the club sides as well. And it just, the standard seems to be so high. Mm-hmm. And it'd just be very interesting. I'd love to know Declan's thoughts on the quality of players, or who's going to be coming through, and there's been any bolters now over the next couple of weeks. But yeah, it certainly bodes well. Raheny had a massive win as well during the week, so it'll be interesting to see how they continue that. And you know, their manager was speaking after the game, and I think we got Declan back now, but you know, Declan, we're just talking about Raheny and their win as well last week. I don't know if you want to come to it a little bit later or now.
Yeah, I think we'll just motor on with the hurling if we can. Okay. We're talking there about Bowden's great win, and the fact that the inter-county management will be looking very closely at this training set to resume within the next form of the likes of Keeney and Paul Ryan in that game was outstanding. But speaking of outstanding, you'd have to say as well, they really in their quarter final win. And you know, Willie Marr, the manager, post match felt that his team had been written off in a lot of quarters, and they were determined to lay down a serious mark last week. And even without the absence of Conor Callan, they certainly did that. And great to see David Tracy back in top form again, you know, Darragh O'Connell playing well, and Sean Moran as well. So good progress for them back in the county semi-final in defence of their title again.
Yeah, well, they certainly did lay down that marker and made a pretty serious point and lay down the challenge to everybody else involved in it. I suppose the shock result of the weekend was Lucan getting the victory over Kilmacud by that single point in the end.
Yeah.
Couldn't have seen that one coming.
Yeah, you wouldn't have. No, that's true. And I'm sure Crokes are very, very disappointed. They would have been serious contenders for the title in many people's eyes this year. Unfortunately, they've fallen short at this particular stage of the competition. But full credit to Lucan Sarr. Outstanding performance on the day. Chris Crummy showing real leadership. He scored 5 points. And former Dublin player Peter Kelly took it a four as well. But Crokes, you know, 24 minutes to score in the second half. They only found themselves with a point down at the end of the day. But a superb victory for Lucan, and this has been threatened for a number of years in the group. And they'll look forward to their semi-final clash now with Coole tomorrow week.
Very good. Okay, well, look, it's the quarterfinals weekend this weekend in the football, of course. Some very interesting clashes going with that. And they starting today, of course, the first two up are Jude's and Skerry's.
Yes, indeed. Good Northside South. Jude's are unbeaten in the competition so far. You know, they got to the semi-final last year when they were beaten by Bowden, and the likes of Kevin McManaman and Niall Coakley have been an outstanding form for the Jude's men so far this year, and they'll be looking to them to power up to victory against the Skerry's team, you know, who have had a very different year, if you like. This time, 12 months later, almost, they're in the county quarter final. So great stuff being done by Brian Cullen and a lot of good people out there. But expect that Jude's perhaps would have too much for them this afternoon.
Okay, we could take on Vincent's as well today. Who do you fancy there?
Who do I fancy? Tell you what I'll do. I'll just toss a coin and see which side it comes down on, you know. Two massive heavyweights. They know what it takes to win this competition, both of them. You know, the Marina men have recovered well after been beaten by Bowden the first day out, so great momentum there under Brian Mullins. Great to see Mossy Quinn still performing great stuff. But Crokes, I mean, like Coole and the Hurling and other teams as well, have great resolve about them this year. They've scored 10-44 in their three games. Confidence is high amongst them. Very, very tough one to call. I would say no more than a kick of the ball either way between them.
Okay, very good. Well, then it brings us on to Sunday, and all of these, of course, are at Parnell Park, but Ballyboden are taking on Raheny.
Yes, Raheny was qualifying for the game this weekend with a quarter-final victory over Oliver Plunkett's as recently as Wednesday night. That game delayed due to a COVID situation there, which thankfully has cleared up. But champions Bowden, yeah, 3 from 3 in the group. And, you know, like Coole and the Hurling, very intent every time they go out of setting down a marker. We're not giving up this title easy. And They face a Raheny team, as say, who only played as recently as Wednesday. They'll be looking to the likes of Brian Fenton and Brian Howard, two outstanding performers for Dublin over the last number of years, to try and upset the apple cart there.
Very good. Okay, and then finally, of course, on Sunday, it's Ballymun taking on Nafina. Another one, it's going to be a tough one to call.
Yeah, very much like the Vincent's Crokes game. Again, kicking the ball perhaps between great neighbours, great rivals, so you can imagine the intensity of the contest there. Ballymun are a team that feel they really need to kick on and start delivering. It's a few years now since they've won the county title. They've had a few disappointing years. But so far this year going very well. I mean, 9-59 so far. And Dean and all amongst us have been outstanding. But we know there's a fine crop of players up at Moby Road as well. They'll be determined. So again, as I say, I kick the ball between them, but I'm not going to tell you which way it's going to go.
Okay, very good. All right, Declan. We'll let you go there then. Unfortunately, the line isn't great, but thanks for sticking with it anyway, and we'll catch up again next week. Turning our attention to football now, but before I do, just to mention that Declan Drake was talking at the end there about the Ladies Intermediate Club Final, Coola versus Castleknock later on, and that's on the live stream this evening as well for those of you that want to catch up on that. But Alan Cawley joins us now to talk football. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. How are you getting on?
We're getting on great, thanks. Not a bother. Well, it's been a very eventful week right across the board in many different ways in football, but I suppose the 12-11 basketball match that they had for Rovers was quite an interesting one.
Yeah, it was, Reggie. Yeah, it was a late night on Thursday night. I was following it on the stream first, and then the stream gave way, and then people were doing live streams from the ground, and there was all sorts of drama. Then, as you say, the penalties, I think there was 26 taken in total. Yeah. So I think it was some sort of a record, all right, the longest penalty shootout, or I was reading that somewhere anyway. But Sam McRovers came through, and they made hard work for it, Reggie, because I fancied it strongly going into the game.
Yeah.
But they were behind twice in the game, but they showed a lot of character because they went down 10 men as well just before extra time. Liam Scales getting two yellows, and they played the whole of extra time as well with 10 men. So they showed a lot of character, and it went to penalties, and obviously they beat Dundalk on penalties in the FAI Cup final last year as well. So they had a bit of, I suppose, good omens going into the penalty shootout from that. And they got the job done, albeit with no little drama anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, it's a huge boost, and there's no question about it. Other clubs disappointed this week, obviously, but from a Rovers point of view and that qualifying round for Europa, just fantastic.
Oh, it's massive, Reggie, and it's the bare minimum that we should be expecting, though, really. Like, you know, look, you look at the draws. Last year, fair enough, there was a couple of difficult draws, and Shamrock Rovers actually played a couple of more difficult teams in the run last year. So when I looked at the draw this year, Derry got a team from Lithuania, Riteri, and they fell at the first hurdle to them, which I was very disappointed with, because they're the bottom of their own league, domestic league, with only six teams in Lithuania, and they're having a dreadful run of it. And Derry lost to them, which I was after extra time as well, but they got beat, so I was very disappointed with that. Bohemians had the toughest task of all the teams, going to the Hungarian team, who people might remember as Videoton,
yeah.
But they've changed their name now, obviously, through the some sponsorship issues. But they put in the best performance of them all. Bohemians were outstanding, and when you consider the budgets and the resources, because the Hungarian champions the night before, Ferencváros, went to beat Celtic. So it just goes to show you the level of opposition the Bohemians were up against, to be fair to them. And they were outstanding, and took them the whole way to penalties and only lost out in a penalty shootout. So I'd have no qualms about them losing whatsoever. They put in a great performance. And then it came down to Shamrock Rovers, and as I say, the least we needed was one team going through, Reggie, and I would have been very, very disappointed had we not got one team through.
Yeah.
As I said, Shamrock Rovers made hard work of it, but they got there in the end. But out of the draws, as I said, the four teams, including Dundalk in the Champions League draw, I expected a bit more from our teams, and I think there's a lot more needed in terms of work overall on the bigger picture of the game here domestically. I'm not sure where the league is at the moment as well. I think it's average enough, to be honest with you. And we normally gauge ourselves against the European opposition, and for me, one out of four, it's only okay.
It's a poor return, yeah. Peter?
Yeah.
Alan, how you doing? I was just
Hi, Peter.
Ask, what's going on in Dundalk? It seems to be an absolute basket case at the moment.
Gosh, I'd need another hour to myself if I was to go into all that, Peter, but they seem to have just shot themselves in the foot, yeah. Like, obviously, there's stories coming out now every couple of days, and it's just such a shame because they've been so good for such a long period of time. Obviously, the success around Stephen for so many years, and they carried the flag for us in Europe and all over, and they were brilliant, and they were I suppose, pulling the league along as well with the standards that they were setting. Vinny carried that on last year, and then there just seems to be a lot of trouble going on behind the scenes, and the owners, they've obviously invested a lot of money, but they seem to be interfering a hell of a lot. And obviously then the news, once Vinny got the sack, which was surprised everybody, then the addition of the new manager coming in, who has no experience at this level whatsoever. So it just was one thing after another, Peter. And as I say, it'll be a while before. They still have the players, like the squad is still there. None of the players have left, and they still have a very good squad. But if you have people interfering and it's affecting, obviously, the performances on the pitch as well, you're not going to have the success. And that was the one thing that was always brilliant with Dundalk over the 8 years, was how they carried themselves and how they conducted themselves. And obviously Stephen was at the forefront of that, and the players as well carried that on, and it was very player-driven as well. And all that seems to be gone out the window, because since the restart they've been a shambles, really. And obviously all the off-the-field issues that are coming to the fore now has affected them massively.
Morale must be shot in the squad. Have you ever, from your own experience, have you ever had anything like that happen where, you know, with all the activities going on at boardroom level and how that kind of seeps down into the squad and into the dressing room as well?
Not really, Peter, because it's not really that normal at our level, because you don't have the huge investors that want to interfere to it and stuff like that. Obviously, we had Ollie Byrne at Shelburne, but Ollie was brilliant in terms of just how good he was, and he used to leave everything up to Pat. And then you had Pat, who was driving everything, Pat Finlan, as a manager. So I think it takes a strong character as well as a manager, that if there is interference, to be able to say, look, we don't need this and we don't want this, because it just leads to trouble. And you see it at the very highest level as well. It almost undermines the manager if you have people interfering from the top. And I don't think it can lead to any success whatsoever. It's rare in our league, Peter, because you don't have big financial investors coming in from the outside trying to call the shots. This is the first time I've heard it, really, in our league, to this level and to this extent. And look at the trouble it's led to. And especially from people who have no connection whatsoever with the club or the town. They don't get the league. They don't understand. But once money's involved, as I always say, it's the root of all evil. And when they're putting the money in, people will say they're entitled to that, but I don't think they're entitled to interfere with trying to pick the team or anything like that. They should leave that to the manager. And he's done a good enough job in doing that last year, Vinny Perk. They won nearly everything. And the squad have been outstanding for the last number of years. Why do you want to interfere now? I'll never know.
Yeah, well, not many people will, but I know it's causing a lot of unrest and a lot of unhappiness up around that part of the world. Hopefully they'll get it sorted out pretty soon. On a more positive note, Bowes could be in for a little bit of a windfall with the news that Matt Doherty could be going to Spurs.
Yeah, it's all positives for Bohemians at the moment, Reggie. On the pitch, off the pitch, they've been outstanding. For me, they've been the story, along with obviously the Dundalk stuff over the last number of years, but Bowes over the last probably 18 months have been absolutely fantastic qualifying for Europe. Keith Long doing an unbelievable job. We saw them in Europe during the week. They can hold their heads proud with the performance, as I said, that they put in. They were outstanding. And they're flying high in the league, and they're pushing Shamrock Rovers all the way. We've only 9 games to go now. It's a cup weekend this weekend, so it's all cup games. But we've only 9 games to go, and hopefully they can hang in the title race. And I think they will hang in and push them all the way, because they've a fantastic team, a brilliant backroom team around them. And also brilliant people off the pitch. We just spoke about Dundalk and the mess going on there off the pitch. The stuff of Bohemians off the pitch has been nothing but first class. And they're celebrating, I think, their 130th year anniversary next week as well. They've a lot of stuff going on with that. And as you say, Reggie, on top of all that, the Brucey bonus is that Matt Doherty's transfer fee to Spurs is going to get them something in the region of 1.5, 1.6 million. So it's just fantastic all around for Bohemians at the moment.
Alan, Stephen Kenny, sorry, I feel like we have you at a job interview here, peppering questions at you, but it's been a very busy week on football, and Stephen Kenny announced his 25-man international squad. Two names that jumped out for me for different reasons at different ends of the experience spectrum were James McCarthy's return and Jason Malumbi. Do you think Jason Malumbi, because he seems to be really highly regarded by Stephen Kenny from his experience as under-21s, do you think he's going to be a bolter into this midfield, or is this an experience builder for him? And same question, do you feel that there's going to be any players in the squad that was named who will maybe jump out and who will be real archetypal Stephen Kenny players?
Well, the two names you mentioned, Peter, those two will start in the game, and I'd be shocked if they don't. If they're fit, they'll play in the game. As you mentioned, James McCarthy, obviously, with the experience side of things, but he put in a really good season with Crystal Palace last year. And I know Stephen was keen to get him back in the fold because he thinks he has an awful lot to offer in that kind of deep-lying defensive role, sitting in front of the back four, but not just for his defensive I suppose, awareness also, because he thinks he's a very good passer at the ball, and Stephen will want to play that passing game, as we know. So don't be surprised to see him starting the game. And I'm glad you brought up Malumbi as well, because I'm a massive fan of this lad. He's a serious talent. He put in a great season also on loan with Millwall, and Stephen is also mad about him, not just as a player, as a person. He really speaks highly of him. So he's in the squad on merit. And don't be surprised, as I say, if he starts the game, and I think James McCarthy will start as well. I was delighted with the squad, Peter. I think it's Stephen has done well to, I suppose, he's retained five or six of the old guard, especially the defensive line. You look at the back four or five there, it's as strong as I think we've ever had. When you look at Seamus Coleman, Matt Doherty, Enda Stevens, John Egan, Shane Duffy. Sorry, that's as good as we've ever had, really. And then you look at the freshness that he's brought into the squad, obviously with some of the younger boys, Malumbi that we've mentioned, Aaron Connolly also, Troy Parrott, Adam Ida. So I think Stephen's done a really good job in naming the squad so far. I felt he handled the press conference really well also in how he spoke. There was a couple of questions, I think, about Obafemi and a tweet. Stephen handled that really well. And I suppose he spoke about the fact that the player, the reason he wasn't in was because the way he wants to play is a 4-3-3, and ideally McGoldrick will be that central player, and hopefully he'll be back for the Finland game. So yeah, I'm excited. I've always been excited about Stephen's tenure in charge anyway. It's a long time coming, Peter, but I think he'll do really, really well, and I think the squad reflects exactly how we're going to play as well, and we're going to have a go.
I fully agree, and it was kind of made it all the more disappointing when Jason McAteer comes out with quotes through his own ignorance of not even knowing Stephen Kenny's achievements.
And he hasn't even kicked the ball yet. Even bear in mind that he's disrespectful to Chris Hughton, who's a highly regarded professional in the game. Also Brian Kerr, who we all know how good and how brilliant Brian has been. He had a bit of a pop at him. It's irrelevant really what he has to say, to be honest with you, because there's no need for it. And if he is going to say something, get your facts straight, because I think he called Stephen's team the under-23s as well. And Stephen's under-21s has been the best under-21 performance in terms of points that we've gained that we've ever had. We've never qualified for a tournament, and here we are on the verge of maybe, and that's all down to Stephen's work. Fair enough, we've a good group of players coming through, but hopefully Jim Crawford can carry on that job and maybe get us qualified. Well, I felt the comments were, and I don't think too many people paid too much attention to them, Peter.
Big season ahead for Troy Parrott. You know, he's moved from Tottenham to Millwall on loan. Again, there's a lot of talk about him, probably more talk than actually what he's delivered on the field so far, but a guy with a lot of talent as well.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. This fella's the real deal as well. We all knew about the hype at Spurs, but I think it's good that he's gone out on loan, Peter, because he needs to play, he needs to get games. And we see that, obviously, with the season Malumbi had last year in the Championship. It's brought him on no end. I think it'll be the same for Troy. And from what I'm hearing already from feedback from people inside at Millwall, and he's only been there for pre-season, but they're absolutely so mad about him that he's really hit the ground running. And I think that was one of the key reasons Stephen called him in, because people might have thought because he hadn't played the games, he might not get into the squad. And I would have had no problems either if he wasn't in this first squad. But once McGoldrick wasn't fit, and from the feedback that I'm hearing and what I think Stephen and the rest of them were hearing about Millwall and pre-season, how it's gone for him, and the report Gary Rowett had, the manager, I think he was keen to get him involved then.
Yeah, well, moving away from stuff here, and I know your hero is Messi, and the announcement that he's going to be...
You're my hero, Reggie.
Oh, yeah, I know. I didn't like to say it on air. But Messi's moving on, if anyone can afford to get him. There's probably two in the running, City and PSG. What do you make it all? And I see Paul Merson is saying in the Irish Daily Star today that Messi is a shadow of his former self. Not so sure that's the case.
Yeah, that's a bit much a shadow. Wow,
shadow.
Yeah, just goes to show the heights he was hitting. But I think he still scored something like 32 goals last year, Reggie, and 18, 19 assists. So if that's a shadow, I wouldn't mind being that shadow, to be honest.
For sure.
But
they still probably get 500 million for him.
Well, that's the thing, and you mentioned two clubs there. I think PSG and Man City. That's what we're talking about in terms of the money and the finance that's kind of on the table here. They're probably the only two that can afford him. And I think what's probably going to sway it is the fact that he has the relationship with Guardiola and also Aguero. They're the best of friends also. So that might sway it. It might push it. I'm sure Guardiola would be mad to get him, even a 33-year-old Messi. Every manager in the world would want him.
But I'd say the league would want him too, wouldn't it?
Well, that's it, Reggie. Yeah, the league, the Premier League. Because I suppose when there's greatness around like that, people always look for something, a stick to beat them with. And the only thing to have... about Messi is the fact that the one we always used to hear was the World Cup, comparing that with Maradona and the Champions League. The other one that we always used to hear is, oh, he never did it in the Premier League, he only done it in La Liga, yeah. Whereas Ronaldo done it in the other two or three leagues. Like, I don't buy into any of that whatsoever, but just in terms of him, actually, for us to tune into the Premier League, because it's so close to us and we watch it every week, for us just tuning in as neutrals or fans to watch the games, it'd be amazing to see him in the Premier League. I'm just sad the way it's all ended at Barcelona. And I know it's football and it's ruthless and all those things that we've seen over the years. But to see a player who's been so good and given them so much and delivered so much to kind of all end in a bit of a fallout, it's quite sad, I think.
It is, but I think it's indicative of Barcelona and the football club itself and the state that it's in. It's not, it doesn't seem to have good direction at the moment.
No, and that comes down to the presidential elections, which goes on over there as well. And Bartomeu is the president at the moment, and he's getting all sorts of stick. And then the manager that comes in as well, I think Koeman, to be fair, says to Messi that, look, the privileges are over. It's a strong statement from Koeman. I wouldn't be saying that to Messi, yeah. To be honest. Yeah. But managers, look, he's coming in trying to put his own stamp on things. People were saying Messi was too powerful and all. But when you have a player as good and all as that, Reggie, and as big as that, and like, how can he not be powerful, you know? And then he's delivering on the pitch. And so it is sad to see, but it'll be interesting now. I suppose everybody's tuned in. Sky are going to hype this to the max in terms of where he goes, especially if he comes to the Premier League.
Yeah.
But Gary Neville seemed to think it's just noise for Messi and it's a power play, and that he thinks he'll stay on at Barcelona. Yeah, so
You never know.
It will be interesting to see.
It could certainly go that way. Quickly, we've got to move our attention just to the Community Shield, of course, Arsenal and Liverpool later on. Are Liverpool red hot favourites, but I don't know. At 4-1, Arsenal, they did it against City.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's hard to call so early. Like, we're only over one season, and here we are getting ready for another one, Reggie. You know, it's coming thick and fast, the games, and we'll be up and running, I think, 12th of September for the Premier League. So, yeah, I wouldn't get too much into these games. Charity Shield, Arsenal, as we spoke about a lot towards the end of the season there with Arteta trying to put a stamp on things. And he's done a good job so far. I think the big thing for him is holding on to Aubameyang. And if he can hold on to him, I think they might have a good season next year. Liverpool as well, at the moment, all the speculation around whether to sign Thiago from Bayern Munich. And if they sign him, they'll be one hell of a team, because he's a phenomenal player, Reggie.
Yeah, absolutely. I know Klopp coming out and saying that they're not in the running for Messi, wouldn't fit in with their squad.
Yeah, I don't think Messi plays rock and roll football like Klopp. He wouldn't be running up and down like a maniac. No. Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.